this wonderful new Masechet, Masechet Shabbat, I urge you to please remember that this is not the next Masechet. We've jumped ahead the entire Seder Zeroyim to start a completely new world, which is at Seder Mo'et. So do not expect to see the connections that you would normally expect to see between the closing of a Masechet and the beginning of the Masechet that we spoke about yesterday, the relationship between the Masechtot that follow in Zeroyim with the end of Masechet Brachot. But Bezrat Hashem, we hope to be able to get to that as soon as we finish our Mishnayos in Taharot and we get back to the beginning of Zeroyim and continue on from where we left off, this time with the Yerushalmi, at which point Zuzels will be able to start giving the shir, I assume. No, I don't think it'll take quite that long. Okay, so we begin today Masechet Shabbat with one of the most brilliant Mishnayos that Rabbeinu HaKadosh ever put together. Remember that one of the things that Rabbeinu HaKadosh was trying the most to do was to have the maximal density of information and the maximal multiple levels of interpretation that are possible. As the Gemara says elsewhere, he included 13 different variations in his Mishnayos. This Mishnah is absolutely a classic because it opens up the door to so many incredible issues without even telling you, and it leaves you completely astounded as to what in the world is it talking about and how exactly are you supposed to parse it. So because of that, it's obviously going to be a little bit confusing. So before we begin, let's first discuss a couple of inyanim that I think are important and were not even, I don't think they even seen by the Rishonim for some reason, but I think life develops and things turn out differently as time goes on so that we're zeichet to see things that were not always so clear. One of the startling issues is that the very last of all of the malachas, the Lamatas malachas in the series of malachas that the Mishnah describes later on, is the malacha of Hotzah, Hamotzim Rishut Rishut. For some reason, the Masechet begins with the Yitziyot HaShabbat, which is strange because one would think that you should go in the order of the Mishnah. Generally speaking, when you have a Mishnah that includes all variants, you start with that Mishnah, and then each perek describes one aspect of that Mishnah, which we've seen many, many times, is the flow of a Masechet. Over here, we start at the end of the Mishnah. So there's many different approaches as to why this would be true. One approach is that, well, we're going to be talking about Erev Shabbos here, because we're going to be talking about not having things in your pocket when you walk out to make sure that you don't carry them, and preparations for Shabbos that involve inyanim of making an Erev. And so we start with Hotzah. Another approach is that the very fact that Hotzah is all the way at the end and is, in fact, very difficult to understand as even why it should be a malacha, since it does not impact an item in any way. And therefore, the way the Rabbeinu Tam terms it, it's called a malacha geru'ah. This is an awfully weak sense of what a malacha is. A malacha, remember, is patterned after, as we'll see in the coming parshiyos, is patterned after malachas ha-mishkan, but in a deeper way, of course, are expressive of the fact that Shabbos represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu's no longer creating, and creation always had an impact on bringing into existence various objects and dealing with them. So how in the heck is just moving something from one place to another considered to be a malacha at all? Because of that, as we're going to see, we have special psukim that talk to us about this particular malacha. Now, one of those psukim we had a while back in the Parshas HaShavua, and that was the giving of the mon. So over there, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Klal Yisrael, Re'u ki Hashem natan lechem HaShabbat, Akein hu noten lechem b'yom ha-shishi lechem yomayim, and then ends with the strange tzivui, Shivu ish tachtav, stay where you are on Shabbat, al yetzei ish mimekomo b'yom ha-shivi'i. Don't go out of where you are on Yom HaShavi'i. Now, we understand that to mean, don't go out carrying a kli in order to get the mon, or perhaps to bring the mon back. That's a machlokas rishonim. That's one of the psukim. And the other pasuk, which we're going to have very soon in the parsha, is the problem of bringing too much stuff to the Mishkan, and everybody jumps up and tells Moshe Rabbeinu Marbima Amlavi. And it says, Vayetzav Moshe Vayavir Kol Bamachane Leimor, Ish V'isha Al Yasu Od Melacha L'Trumat HaKodesh, which resulted in Vayikalei Ha'am Mehavi. So apparently the bringing of the material was itself a problem. And Moshe announces no more bringing to the Mishkan. Not only no more creating more stuff, don't bring any more things to the Mishkan. Now, both of these are understood to be remuzim to this strange Malacha Geruah. The problem is, the real problem is, that the Rishonim do not discuss, is that it is not that the Masechet begins with Hotzah. The Masechet doesn't discuss anything else but Hotzah. So it goes on to talk about the beginnings of the concept of Hotzah. Then it turns out to be talking about what kind of things a woman is allowed to wear, and what kind of things a man is allowed to wear, and what kind of things can you put on an animal on Shabbos, and what do you do if you find something in the middle of the street, and can you carry your tefillin? And I mean, the entire Masechet has a couple of pages in Rabbi Akiva discussing the other malachas, you know, and then it's got another 150 pages discussing Hotzah, but that's not enough, because then it goes on to the next Masechet, which is Masechet Erevin, which is all about Hotzah as well. Not to mention that one of the major issues of Shabbos, of course, as anybody could tell from the number of Prokim and the Rambam, or Tz'ifim that are dedicated to the Shulchan Aruch, is Muktzah. And Muktzah itself is fundamentally an extension of the concept of Hotzah, according to most Rishonim. And therefore, to ask why would we begin with Hotzah, to the very least, beggars the question. So I just point this out for you. Hopefully we'll have a chance to deal with the centrality of the concept of Hotzah. But obviously the very fact that something is a Malacha Geruah forces us to expand our understanding of what Malacha means. And one of the simple ways in which Tosfos explains why we would call it Malacha Geruah is because, forget about the fact that you're not doing anything. I mean, it seems insane that you'd be allowed to lift 20,000 pounds in your home and carry it from one place to another and move all your furniture and go up to the attic and do whatever you want on Shabbos, and you're sweating and dying from all of this work that you're doing. That's not called work on Shabbos. That's not called a malacha. But if you lift up a Cheerio, and you take the Cheerio from your front door to the outside in order to have a picnic, then you're chayev misa. What? So how in the world is this supposed to be a malacha that is making sense? So again, it becomes clear to us that the idea of not having a change in the object and changing only the spatial coordinates of an object is an astoundingly sophisticated new understanding of the nature of Malacha Bichlal. And therefore, not only does it reflect more profoundly on Maisa Bereishis, where the essence of Maisa Bereishis is the creation of dimension, which allows for the specific distinctions between things that can occupy their own time-space, but also means that the relationship of an object to the universe around it is more important than the issues within the object itself. And that completely changes what a malacha means to us and how we appreciate Maisa Bereishis. Now, that is a wonderful reason to not only begin with Hotzah, which now is obvious why I would begin with that, because it's the most expansive understanding of the nature of malacha, but also why it would occupy us so inordinately. Now, there's another issue over here, and that is that, in a sense, Hotzah is the most complex of the melachos in terms of understanding the nature of change. Because in terms of the nature of change within a material or an object itself, we can define it rather grossly. But when it comes to a change in spatial coordinates, we have to recognize that there is, first of all, the change in the surrounding space, but there is also the question of the extent of the relationship to the surrounding space, which suddenly becomes very important. It's because of this that the act of Hotzah consists of three separate issues. One of them is called Akira, one of them is called Hanacha, and one of them is called the Havara Mirushut Rushut in the most technical sense. So the first thing that a act of Hotzah Mirushut Rushut consists of is breaking the relationship between an object and the space which contains it. Now, the way that you do it is that whatever it was on, whatever it was lying on, and lying on also has very strict definitions. Because, I mean, suppose you have a spike in a rishus. You put something on the top of a spike and balance it there. You would certainly not consider it to be firmly established within a place, even though in terms of the symbol relationship to space, who cares how firmly placed it is? But in terms of its relationship to the space, it makes a great deal of difference. If I'm balanced on a spike, then chances are I'm not going to be in this exact place very long, and I don't really have any sense of being there if I'm a conscious object. If I'm looking at that object, I don't see it as being firmly implanted in that space. Picking it off of a true space, we'll see that that's defined by Amokam of Arba, by Arba Tvachim. And then there's also, of course, then there comes another issue. What about relative space? Relative space is very simple. You don't need Einstein to understand relativity if you need to deal with Hotzah on Shabbos. So, for instance, suppose you have a boat that is moving in water, and you take an object out of the boat, which is itself perhaps a Rishus HaYochid, which is now afloat in a Rishus HaRabim, relative to the water underneath, the object was not at rest. Relative to the boat, the object is at rest. Taking the object out of the place on its boat, is that considered to be an Akira? Or do we look at ultimately what it's moving in terms of the planet as a whole? By the way, one of Einstein's favorite thought experiments, of course, was a moving train. Somebody's on the train is moving vis-a-vis the ground underneath them, somebody else is standing outside. This was one of his earliest thought experiments in terms of the speed of light and what the implications would be to somebody who's standing there on the outside or someone who's on the train, which changed his entire sense of what an inertial field is. The same exact issue is raised in the Gemara vis-a-vis boats as in terms of relativity. So that's another issue. So that means the Akira, item number one. Item number two would be the placement, which is called the Hanacha, of the object in the new space. And that placement has the same requirements. But this now raises another issue. Because where you have something that is within one space and extends into another space, let's say you have a tree that has a branch going out from the tree into a space outside. What do you look at? Do you look at the place where the tree is implanted and this is part of the tree? Do you look at the overall space where the branch is? This becomes more complicated when the tree and the branch is a human and a hand. Is the hand of the human in the place where the hand is? Or is the hand of a human always viewed as being part of where the person is? Now, all of these issues need to be understood in order for us to properly parse the Mishnah. And what the Mishnah does is throws all of them into our face and expect us to start working it out and figuring out what Rebbe is talking about. And, of course, Rebbe's talking on many different levels, so we'll never figure out precisely, because there is no precisely. There's many, many different levels of parsing this Mishnah. But one thing that fascinatingly comes from the fact that we use those two psukim, very separate psukim. It's not even clear whether you were referring to going out of your home into the Rishus HaRabim carrying something, or were we referring to coming from the outside, carrying the mun, going back into your home that the Torah is talking about. But what that means is the very fact that we need two psukim to identify the nature of Hotzah is very surprising and leads the Gemara to recognize that we must address separately the question of whether you're inside going out or whether you are outside going in. One of those is called technically Hotza'ah, where you take out from Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim, and the other one is called Hachnasah. Now, normally, I would simply go for the simple and elegant way of stating this, and I would say moving from one spatial coordinate to a different, which is in the end what the Mishnah does say, Hamotzi Mirishut Rishut. However, in terms of the details of understanding Hotza'ah, if I start from the bottom, as I'm doing over here in the Mishnah, I must examine separately both of them, because remember, the entire idea is a tremendous chiddush, and it's called a melacha geruah. If I'm not told up front that it would be the same chiyuv going from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaRabim to Rishut HaYachid, I might easily have assumed that the more concretely defined a space is, which is essentially the definition of Rishut HaYachid, a concretely defined local space, which is defined by the technical sense of what a mechitza is, that could be almost invisible with a small thin wire going between two poles and so on and so forth. But whatever the nature of a mechitza is, having it surround a particular space is obviously a more concrete, easily identifiable space than the wide open fields, let's say, right? So I might have thought that perhaps the Isser is only in one direction, making something more dimensionally defined, or making something less dimensionally defined, more open to variation. Because of that, I need to describe separately in our Mishnah, Hotza'ah versus Hachnasa. So that means there's a lot of issues that are going to be all mushed together in this Mishnah. And in fact, we're going to see, by the time we get to tomorrow, to the end of Amud Beis, we're going to leave the end till tomorrow, we're going to see that there's really 16 different cases that are spoken of in the Mishnah in a very condensed fashion. But the idea of the Mishnah presents 16 different scenarios while pretending to speak about four. So it's very fascinating. Then it expects us to choose 8 out of the 16 that are particularly important that it's being merames to. And then we have to figure which 8 it is that we're talking about. And this, of course, leads not only to questions in the Gemara about understand the Mishnah, but many questions in the Rishonim about understanding the explanations of the Gemara and what exactly the cases were. So with that, I hope brief enough introduction. I hope it doesn't ruin our Mishnayos for today, but I think it was important to begin. Let us take a look at our Mishnah. Take a look at the 16 cases and how it is that Rebbe's got it all shorthanded. And one of the shorthands that we talk about over here is we easily refer to the position of a person by calling him rich or poor. So we're assuming if he's a Baal HaBayit, then he's a Baal HaBayit. He's inside of a home. If he's poor, he's outside of a home. And the question is, the relationship between an Ani and a Baal HaBayit, of course, raises the issue, especially around Purim time, if the guy at the door is a Meshulach. And if the guy at the door is a Meshulach, so then it all starts with perhaps his handing you a letter in which he is recommended by such and such Gedolei Torah to give him money. You're putting money in his hands and he's taking out the money from your Rishus. And that's one way it goes. Depends what time of the year it is. So in order to refer to the position of the person, and this reminds us, thank you very much, Rabbi Kaplan, yes, indeed. Speaking of Purim and speaking of Tzedakah and speaking of Reb Barnea, who is present in spirit and whose envelopes are probably somewhere near the table over there. And speaking of the virtual envelopes, which could just be a little email or WhatsApp to me letting me know I should give Tzedakah for you to Rabbi Kaplan, please let me know in time and specify whether you're a Yudalidnik or a Tetvavnik in terms of the mitzvah. When do you want that tzedakah given in your name? Moving on. So we started over here. Thank you very much for that reminder. I think it came from the Rebbe, even if I'm not mistaken. That's a serious reminder. And so what we're talking about over here is Yitziyot HaShabbat, Shtayim Shem Arba Bifnim, V'Shtayim Shem Arba B'chutz. So we're going to assume that the meaning of Bifnim is there are two, which really equal four, for people standing inside, which are also two, but which really are four, to people standing outside. So we're assuming now that the two means two chiyumim d'oraisa, which are four when you extend the Yisuri d'Rabbanan on doing a partial malacha. And remember, there's a big, big opening in Dinim of Hotzah for partial malachas, because since Hotzah consists of three separate aspects, namely the Akira, and then the movement into the other Rishus, and then the Hanacha, it is easy to conceive of cases where you're doing only one or the other. And those cases are not a D'oraisa malacha, but because they represent either, this is Machlokas, they represent either part of a malacha, they represent the beginnings of a malacha, or they represent the possibility of a completion of a malacha. We'll see the differences between those approaches. They would be usher midrabbana. So what we seem to talk about over here is a total of 8 cases, 4 of them, 2 of which are d'oraisa, 2 of which are d'rabbana for someone who's standing indoors, 4 of them, 2 of which are d'rabbana, 2 of which are d'oraisa for someone standing outdoors, and that's the cases that are offered. Now, Rebbe's going to explain. Ketzah. Well, We're taking the Oni as the guy who is Omed Bachut. So he stands outside. The Balabayit is referring to the man who's standing inside. Okay, from now on, actually, we're doing any contract, we want to define our terms up front. Okay, so we've defined our terms. Oni means outside, Balabayit means inside. So, Pashata Aniyat Yado Lifnim. The Oni is holding his letter of recommendation. And it's Shabbos. And he's at the door. And he's standing outside. And he inserts his hand into the Rishus HaYochid of the Balabayit and deposits his letter into the open hand of the Balabayit. Okay, that is case one. And in that case, he was over on Hachnasa because he did the Akira by moving that letter from a position of standing still out of the Rishus, although it's still in his hand, over the line that extends into the house. And then he did a Hanacha by depositing it in the hand of the Balabayit, who's now going to be reading the letter. Did the Balabayit do anything in that case? Well, he was completely inert. So this would represent one of the 16 issues that we need to take into consideration, being the object of or making it possible for someone to put something into your hand and in doing so, completing an act of Otzah on Shabbos. So that is not, as we're going to see, one of the things that we're supposed to pay attention to in the Mishnah, although it's one of the 16 variants. And the Rabbanim were not mechayev a person for being an inert shelf in a melacha on Shabbos. Then the guy takes out some cash, and the Ani picks up the cash from the hand of the Balabayit, and Hotzi, he takes it out. In those two cases, the Ani is chayav, and the Balabayit is patur. In both of those cases, there is a hotza'a mirushut l'rushut. In the first case, there is a hachnasa mirushut l'rushut on the part of an ani. In the second case, there is a hotza'a mirushut l'rushut on the part of the ani. Now, suppose the ani stands at the door and he simply asks for charity and he doesn't give anything to show that he is recommended. The Balabayit takes out some cash, sticks his hand out through the door, and deposits the money into the hand of the Ani. Or, after the Ani takes it, perhaps he writes out a receipt. And then the Balabayit takes the receipt and brings it into the house. In this case, the Balabayit is the one who is chayev. In the first case, he did a hotza'a. In the second case, he did a hachnasa. And the Ani is potter in both of these cases. In the first case, he simply held his hand out and the Balabayit did everything. And in the second case, he simply held his, in the second case, the Ani was the one who moved it, but the Balabayit was the one who simply stood still. The second case was the case of the receipt. So the Ani simply stood still in that case. Now suppose, Parshata Ani et Yado Lifnim, what if the Ani had those recommendation papers in his hands, sticks them into the house, but he does not put them into the hand of the Balabayit. So that means that he did the Akira, and he did the movement across the threshold into a different space, but he never deposits it into the new space. Instead, the Balabayit picks up the papers from inside of his hands, or the Balabayit perhaps puts money into the hand that had been inserted, and now the Ani removes the money from the Rishus of the house. In this case, both of them are potter. In the first case, the Ani did not do a hanacha. All that he did was a hachnasa with the Akira, but there was no hanacha in the new space. It was only the Balabayit who did the hanacha. In the second case, it was the Balabayit who did the Akira, because the Balabayit took the cash out of its secure place in the Rishut HaYachid, which was his home, and he put it into the hands of the Ani. All that the Ani did was remove it. But at that point, the cash was no longer firmly encased in its initial space because it had been removed from its place by the Balabayit, so that all the Ani did in that case would be the Hanacha. But he didn't do the Akira. So here we have a case where one individual does the akira, another individual does the hanacha. Both of them, in this case, are potter. If pashat ba'al habayit et yado lachutz, now suppose the ba'al habayit sticks his hand out with the cash, and now he's got his open palm with the cash in his palm, and the oni takes the money out, which effectively puts it into the Rishut HaRabim, or vice versa, natan letocha vihichnis, shnehem piturim. If the Baal HaBayit would put his empty hand out, the oni would put the paper, the receipt, into the empty hand, and then the Baal HaBayit would bring it in which case the Baal HaBayit did the hanacha. In this case, one does the akira, one does the hanacha. That is not an entire malacha, and a malacha that is achieved through two separate acts by two separate people is not considered to be a malacha d'oraita. However, both of them would be potter, which means that it seems to be that the word potter, as we're going to see, means you're not chayev, but you did something wrong. So it would appear in this case that all parties did something wrong. Now, if all parties did something wrong, then obviously we have 12 cases in the Mishnah and not 8 cases. Because all of these latter cases, if they're potter, then they were originally osir. So then you can't say there were Shnayim Shein Arba and Shnayim Shein Arba, because the Shnayim Shein Arba includes two Peturim in both cases. But if we're going to talk about all the cases of Peturim, then why don't we talk about all of the Peturim? Whether the Peturim were in terms of the Hanukkah, the Peturim were in terms of the Akira, or whether the Peturim were in terms of somebody standing outside, or the Peturim were in terms of somebody standing inside. These are all questions that are going to be discussed in the Gemara. A further issue that the Mishnah leaves us scratching our head about is, what is the status of the hand? I mean, we're treating this hand in many different ways. If the hand is outside in the other Rishos, so then we're treating this hand as if it is not in the Rishos that it is in, right? Because we're saying that the very fact that you extended your hand with the money into the other Rishos is not considered to have been placing the money into the other Rishos. You still need the oni to take the money out of the hand. And yet, if the oni would deposit something into your hand when it's with you in your Rishos, then it's considered to be that the oni did the hanacha, even though it's only in your hand. Now make up your mind. Where is that hand? That also is an issue that needs to be established by the Gemara later. So, says the Gemara, it's very strange that in our Mishnah, it lists Shnayim Shein Arba and Shnayim Shein Arba. So it talks about a total of 8 different cases. And yet, what is weird is that we have a mentioning of this Mishnah in the beginning of Masechet Shavuot. In the beginning of Masechet Shavuot, we have a list of various things, all of which are Shnayim Shein Arba, as we'll see in a moment. One of that list, of course, is this case of Shabbos, which is Shnayim Shein Arba. And yet, over there in Shavuos, it does not say Shnayim Shein Arba Bifnim and Shnayim Shein Arba Bechutz. It just says Shnayim Shein Arba. Therefore, the Gemara wants to know, why the difference? So, Tanan Hatam, if we take a look at the Mishnah in the opening of Masechet Shavuot, Shavuot Shtayim Shein Arba, that's case number 1. That refers to the meaning of the Pasuk that says, Lahara Oleitiv, somebody who makes a Shvua is going to be Chayev a Korban Olav Yored, if that Shvua is to do something good for himself or to do something bad for himself. We understand that to mean, Lahara or Lahativ would mean, I will eat something, I won't eat. If he said, I won't eat today, that's bad. I will eat something, that's being kind to himself. That's Lahara or Lahativ. We understand from a remez in the Pasuk that that is also true in the past. I did eat something today. I swear I did eat. I swear I did not eat something today. Now that, of course, is an entirely different type of Shvua. And this is something we need to discuss in Shvuas, how the Torah is merames a Shvua that is mechay of an activity in the future, to the other sense of I take an oath in court that something did or did not happen. They don't really seem to be related in any profound way, other than perhaps both of them are very, very strongly affirmative. But how the two would be related in one pasuk to a korban olav yored is not clear. Okay, but we'll worry about that in Shvuas. But anyway, the two cases of I will or won't eat become 4 cases of I did or did not eat. How about Yediyot HaTumah? Well, Yediyot HaTumah are also Shtayim Shein Arba, and that's simply because there are two fundamental elements in the din of bringing, again, a Korban Olah Yored for either being Tomei and going into the Beit HaMikdash, or being Tomei and eating food of Kodesh. And both of those cases, if it's a shogeg, then you would be chayav a korban olah v'yored. But it's a very unique case because the Torah specifies the ne'elam mimenu twice, which means that there needs to be something that you once knew and then you forgot. And that is not normally the case of a shogeg. You don't have to once know and then forget. You just have to be unaware. In which case, if we take the two issues of the tumah versus what you did while you were tamei, we end up with four cases, because you can be ne'elam, the fact that you were tamei, and then you went into the Beis HaMikdash. You can be ne'elam, the fact that you were tamei, and then you ate something of Kodesh. Or you can remember the fact that you were tamei, but forget that this thing was Kodesh meat. Or you can remember that you were tamei and forget that this place is the Beis HaMikdash. That means you're usher to go in betumah. In either event, you would be chayav a korban olah v'yored because you were mekayim the ha'alama before and the idea afterwards. So that's shnayim shein arba. Negaim, continues the Mishnah. The different types of negaim are also shnayim shein arba. That's because the only negaim that are discussed in the Torah are specifically a se'et and a baharet. And those are two different levels of the of brightness of the skin, of white coloration. And in the end, because the Torah uses the lashon of sapachat, and sapachat always means secondary to, as we see in the sfachenina lechat of the mishpachot of the kahuna, somebody who wants to get truma and was rejected and he's going to beg for truma, it's called sifacheni. So if sapachat means a sipuach, which is the big word that is now in politics. Will there be a sipuach? Are we going to take over the area that the Palestinians captured from us? Begineva, Gedela, are we going to take them back? In Samara, that's called sapachat, sipuach. But in any event, that lashon of sifacheni is a secondary two. And from there, we learned there is a secondary mara to se'et, a secondary mara to baharet, and the precise coloration and the albedo is defined in the Mishnah there. And now the other case that it mentions over there is Yitziyot HaShabbat. And it says Yitziyot HaShabbat, Shtayim Shein Arba, and of all things, it stops right there. Two which are four. Now, how come over there it's two which are four, and over here it's two which are four inside and two which are four outside, and what's going on? So there seems to be some contradiction between the Mishnayos. Ma'ishnatim tatan shnayim shein arba v'tulo, answers the Gemara, because harcha de'ikah shabbatu, tani avot v'tani tolato. Now we're going to start now, which is always the derech l'Gemara, to give the type of answers that make all kinds of assumptions that never make any sense, and it force you to get deeper and deeper into the issue that you're thinking about. So right off the bat, what we say is, well, look, if you're talking about the nature of hotza'ah, so then it would appear that the Aviru Kol B'machane is the main pasuk where it says that Ish, Al Yitzei, to go out and to bring. There it's talking about Al Yitzei to take the man. I mean, that's not the fundamental place. The fundamental place is bringing something from your home to the Mikdash, right? So that's Mashma Hotza'ah. Hotza'ah is going from Reshut HaYachid into Reshut HaRabim, not hachnasa. So even though we do learn out that there is a tolada, which is called hachnasa, remember that the concept of a tolada is a conceptual extension of a concept that was expressed in terms of the dinim of the Mishkan. And that conceptual expression means that we can include it under the general umbrella rubric of the name of the malacha. And since it essentially does the same thing, it is also included, but it's not the main title of the idea. And the Gemara later on is going to question what is the difference really calling something a tolda or calling something an av itself. That has to do with the chiyuvim of multiple avot or multiple toladot that you're not chayiv twice if you do an av and its own tolada. But in any event, We're assuming for now that the av itself would be only the act of taking out from Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim, which is called Yitziyot. And the hachnasa would be only the avot. So because of that, where it's talking about limiting itself only to be dealing with the din of the Yitziyot HaShabbat, which is taking out from Rishut HaYachid, so you only have four cases. If you include the hachnasot, then you have eight cases. So over there, the Lavika Shabbatu, it only discusses the Avot and does not discuss the Toledot. Whereas here, it's really the main Iker Shabbos. So it says both Avot v'tani Toledot. That makes sense. Wait, it does not make sense. Excuse me. Please clarify. What are the Avot? The Avot are only the Yitziyot, you're assuming now, which means going out from Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim. Where do you get four, excuse me? How do you get four? There was a Yitziyah where the Oni took stuff out of the hand of the Baal HaBayit and brought it outside. That was one. And the other one was where the Baal HaBayit took something out of his house and put it into the hands of the Oni. That was the only case that we were talking about, that you're chayev on Hotzaot. So where in the world did you get the idea that there were Shnaim Shein Arba? I mean, you could say there's Shnaim Shein Arba if you want to include the cases where you're potter. Yes, so then we had a lot of cases of where you only did you didn't do the Akira, but you did do the Hotza'ah. Okay, right. So that would be the case where the Baal HaBayit had put something into the hand of the Ani, or the opposite case. Fine, but those you're not chayev on, right? So maybe that's how you want to explain it. You want to explain there's two hotza'ot that you're chayev on and the two hotza'ot that you're not chayev on. And when you think about that, you'll see it's not so simple, because it's not really mirror cases at all to be talking about hotza'ot, and you've got to figure out, how did you get two? Why aren't there four? Fine, but it's not for us now at this level of the quick review of the Masechet. So maybe you'll tell me, okay, maybe that's what it means. V'chitema, yeah, it means, you know, let's get inside, sorry. So what are the avos in my niyu? Yitziyot. But there's only two yitziyot. Now maybe you'll tell me, okay, but we're including the ones that are chayev and the ones that are potter. You can't say that in Masechet Shavuot, because all of the other items that you mention in the Mishnah are items of chiyev, not of tur. They're all the diaraitas, the negoyim. It's all diaraita. The Shvuas is all Diorita. The Yediyah Satuma, it's all Diorita. How all of a sudden would we compare an Inyan of Shabbos, which is Shnayim Shein Arba, by involving the Rabbanans? It just doesn't seem to be an appropriate way of creating a Mishnah. It doesn't belong with the rest of the things at all. Okay, so therefore I reject that approach, because Mahatam Kula L'Chiyuva, Fachanami Kula L'Chiyuva. Okay, says Rav Papa, I will give you the answer. The answer is this. Look. If we're talking about here, where we're dealing with Iker Shabbos, all right, so then we list all of the cases of Chiyuv, and we list all of the cases of Ptur. But over there, where we're not talking about the main Sugya of Shabbos, I mean, we're just bringing it in to show the structure of Shnayim Shem Arba, we're only going to list the cases of Chiyuv. We're not going to list the cases of Ptur. So if you're listing the cases of Chiyuv, so then you do have two Yitziyot, one for the Oni, one for the Baal HaBayit, and two Hachnasot, one for the Oni, one for the Baal HaBayit. So, okay, so therefore you've got Shnayim Shein Arba, but that's all you've got. If you're ready to talk about doing only the Hanocha, or perhaps doing only the Akira, I'm not sure how you want to limit it, because, I mean, there's really 12 cases. I don't get how you have another four cases instead of another eight cases, but however you'll manage that, in this Masechet, which is the Iker Shabbos, we want to give you over all of the dinim. Therefore, we're willing to expand into even cases that are potter, okay? Says the Gemara, no, not okay. I don't understand. Does the Mishnah say the word Yitziyot HaShabbat, or does it not? Doesn't the word Yitziyot HaShabbat by definition mean Hotza'ot? Yitziyot means going out of your house, in which case we're only talking about Hotza'ah. You can't just throw in Hachnasa and say, well, but we've got four cases of Chiyuv if you include Hachnasa, but the Mishnah does not include Hachnasa. The Mishnah calls itself the Mishnah describing Yitziyot HaShabbat. How could it possibly be the Mishnah that is building on the idea of Hachnasa? That's weird. Asks the Gemara, what? I understand. What are the cases of chiyuv that we're allowed to talk about over here? Yitziot, I mean, that's what it says. How many yitziot of chiyuv are there? Just tell me, man. Don't try jazzing it up. There's two cases of yitziot. What are you giving me all of this stuff for, Papa? I know you got two mouths, but it's not going to help over here. There's only two yitziot, one of the ani and one of the balabayit. So what's the bottom line? Answers the Gemara, Omer of Ashi, it's about time to break out of that prejudice. The concept of yitziot HaShabbat does not mean going out of your front door. It means going out of your space. I don't care where that space is. And therefore, ultimately, yitziot HaShabbat includes also hachnasot, because the idea over here is only the spatial references, and therefore the Tana calls hachnasa hotza'ah. How do I'll prove it to you. Minitzan. Hamotzi mirashut rashut chayav. The way that we define the Ikar Malacha in the Mishnayos of the Lamedtes Malacha is somebody who takes out of one rishus to another. Now explain to me, if you use the word run rishus to another, how you use the word take out? Because if it's take out, then it means it got out of the restaurant into the outside. So that's why it's take out. So how could you call it take out and then describe take in? If it's motzi mirishus, rishus is from any rishus, rishus A to rishus B. What makes it take out? So obviously the meaning of the word take out is take out from space A to space B. And I don't care what direction you're going. Could be any, we can define any space as space A, which is where you started in, and any space as space B, which is where you ended in. Obviously. So that means that however you want to understand it, the Tana is teaching you something by using the word yitziot to mean spatial changes and not to mean takeout. That is simply a prejudice. And that proves it, okay? Hamotzi mishus rishus chayav, milo eskinus gomayom mishut rashim, rishut rabim mishut hayachid. Space A to space B includes going from outside to inside, and nonetheless it's called takeout. So obviously it's not a reference to out of rishus hayachid. And why is that? Think about that, man. It's telling you an important yesod of the nature of otzah. Kol akirat chefetz mimekomo. Uprooting an item from its own space is the definition of otzah. And that's why the Tana is calling it otzah. Omer Avina, wouldn't you kind of go to look at the Mishnah way up ahead about yitziyam rishus rishus? Look at our Mishnah for the ultimate proof that the Tana uses the word yitziyot even on Hachmasot. Just read the Mishnah like any simple person. It says Yitziot HaShabbat, and then it explains the Yitziot HaShabbat. How does it explain the Yitziot HaShabbat? In the most insane way. It says, the Ani sticks his hand into the Ani sticks his hand into Rishus HaYochid. That's not takeout. Oh, you don't mean takeout. Uh-huh, exactly. You can't start defining takeout by putting something in, can you? So therefore, the Mishnah itself immediately slaps you across the face and says, hey, dum-dum, we are not talking about takeout. We're talking about changing. That's the point of Yitziot. Shee. So diktoni Yitziot, v'kom mefar shachnasala alter, shmar mina, clearly, it's got to be, it's specifically informing you that even achnasa is called Yitziyah. Rava Amar, Rava says this entire idea is built on a misapprehension of what the word Yitziot means. Yitziot does not mean what you think it means. The concept of yitziot simply means rishuyot that allow for yitziot. And as Tosis points out, when we use the word hotzaot, we talk about the gvulot of Eretz Yisrael, vayu totzaotav hayama. What does totzaotav mean? It doesn't mean taking something out. It means the rishus of that particular shevet as defined. Therefore, yitziot HaShabbat shtayim means there are two separate primary spaces that are going to be defined in Shabbos. Now, there's also a remez here to the fact that ultimately there are also two secondary spaces, which means that there are really two but four spaces. But that's not how we're defining the Mishnah. We're defining the Mishnah that al yedei the yitziot HaShabbat, which are shtayim, you are led to four possible different types of chiyuv or ptur in terms of yitziyah v'hachnasot. The very rishuyot, which are shtayim, rishut yachid, rishut rabim, provide for four separate types of chiyuvim that we're going to be getting into. And in a moment, of course, we're going to ask, it's even worse, because here it's really problematic, because those two rishuyot really give you 16 different possible interactions as defined in the Mishnah, which is what we will begin with, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow.